Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. If someone from the Jazz Age could vault themselves into modern America, one thing they'd notice immediately is how long people live. Grandmothers run marathons at 75. Former Fed Chair Alan Greenspan came out with a book in his late 80s. And 93-year-old showbiz legend Betty White is still hitting the talk show circuit.
At 90 years old, I was not expecting this. Let's put it that way.
Just the way things have gone the last couple of years has been just fantastic.
That's right. So I'm going to start lying about my age. I'm 45.
You're 45.
For David Sinclair, this kind of vitality is just the beginning. He's a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School, and he believes that in the not-too-distant future, we're going to be healthier for much, much longer. Many people have viewed aging as something that just happens, but Sinclair actually sees it as an affliction, something to treat, rather than a condition that we should just passively accept.
Even after 50 years, we scientists don't fully agree on what aging is. I know that sounds pathetic, but the truth is that you can define it as a very natural but distinct process from disease, or you can call it a disease that just about everybody gets if they live long enough. More and more, and myself included, are on the side of you're afflicted with aging. It's a disease, or at least a disorder that we all will get. If you look up in the Merck Manual of Geriatrics, a thing on my shelf, a book there, the definition that they have is that if a disease or some disorder affects less than half the population over time, we call that a disease. And a lot of people study diseases, try to prevent and cure diseases. But if it happens to the majority of people over time, we call that aging, and very few people work on that. And I would argue that the fact that most people live long enough to get aging means that we should put a lot of resources into that rather than just regarding it as a natural course of life like we used to with infections and cancer 100 years ago.
I would think that a lot of people for a long time have been looking, and maybe not in the most scientific way, but for ways to reverse the process of aging, right? A lot of people would say, well, that's a ridiculous search because, you know, as you say, it happens to all of us. It's inevitable. You're saying maybe not so ridiculous.
Right. Well, it's definitely not inevitable in lab animals. Over the last 10 years, my lab and many others around the world have shown that it's not just possible to delay aging, but actually to reverse aspects of it. To give you an example from my lab, we published a paper that showed that within a week, if you give just the right molecule by injection, we could reverse muscle aging rapidly. So in that week, we took effectively a mouse that would be the human equivalent of 60-year-old, and then we made it back to a 20, 30-year-old mouse. And that was really easy to do once you knew how to do it. And so we're working on trying to reverse aging in the whole animal and also on making these molecules available as medicines to perhaps reverse and certainly delay aging in people as well.
No, I assume that mouse did eventually die. Is that true?
Well, they did through rather unnatural causes that we won't talk about. But we're testing whether these mice, other mice that we treat for longer, will live longer. And our prediction is that they will because my lab and others have shown quite successfully that these mice are healthier overall. They have better hearing. In fact, they can recover from hearing loss. They have better eyesight. They can run twice as far on a treadmill without ever having trained before. These are super mice by all accounts, and we hope that if we do the equivalent in humans, you may have a drug that you start taking in your 30s or 40s that would keep you healthy. You wouldn't have to worry about getting cancer or Alzheimer's till you're in your 90s or beyond.
But you're saying a 90-year-old may feel like a 60-year-old, right? But they're still 90.
Absolutely. And the only way we know how to slow down aging and to make a mouse live longer is to keep them healthy. They go hand in hand. I've never been able to keep a sick mouse alive for longer. So the first step is make the mouse or make the human disease-free and energetic. Imagine a 90-year-old still able to play tennis. That's what we're thinking about. And as a side effect, you live longer. Not because you spend longer in a nursing home, but because you don't enter the nursing home in the first place.
Okay, so give me a sense. We see the average age for an American, average age of death is about 80, right? How long do you think that could be pushed up to?
I'm on record saying that the first person to live 150 has already been born. It's not crazy to say that anymore. It used to be 10 years ago. I think that within the next decade, we'll have at least one, possibly many molecules available for your doctor to prescribe that will extend your lifespan at least 5 years, possibly more. To put that in context, we can routinely extend the lifespan of lab mice 20, sometimes 30, 40%. We just need to figure out how to do this in humans.
If you're thinking about implementing this in the next 10, 20 years, I wonder how hard it is to test a drug where the very nature of it is that it takes a long, long time to figure out, is this going to cause death? Is it going to cause side effects that we've really never thought about, right? Hopefully, it takes 30, 40 years to figure that out. Well, that's not like an easy clinical trial to do.
It's true. A clinical trial in aging is more difficult than most and can take arguably 5 to 7 years to show that it's working. But if you have enough people and they're old enough, in just a few years, you should get a result that you're slowing down aging and decreasing the mortality rate. And it's not only just a matter of numbers of people and money, it's also a mindset. The medical research community and the aging field that I'm part of has been reluctant until recently to think of regarding aging as a goal for medicines. But that's changing. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the medical community is finally realizing that it may be worthwhile trying to make a medicine to slow down aging itself. And there are active discussions between we scientists and the FDA right now.
Well, that's a really interesting point because historically, the FDA does not like to test drugs on healthy people. It's one thing if you have cancer and you're terminally ill. It's much easier to test a drug because what's the downside? I mean, you're already in trouble. And the potential upside is you might stay alive, and that would be fantastic. But if you may stay alive for 10 years anyway, to test something on you that could be potentially dangerous, I guess I just wonder how realistic it is that in 10 or 20 years we really do have that pill to fight aging.
Well, I think it's going to happen. And within 10 years, I'd be surprised if there isn't a drug available. And the reason is that we found a shortcut. We think we have, and this is what we're talking to the FDA about. We can take existing drugs that have been in people for 30 years. There's a drug called metformin that people take for diabetes, and it's been shown in large studies that people who are on that drug do better. Even if they have diabetes, they can live longer than expected, even longer than people without diabetes. And so you could take a drug that's already known to be very safe and try that first and pave the way for new molecules that are even better.
You must have thought about if we all live longer, much longer, we're not talking about a couple of years longer, but much longer, how that would change in some way the stages of our lives. Have you thought about them? We think of like, this is childhood and this is the period of time when you're a parent and you know you can give birth to a child and this is the period of time when we retire. How does that change if instead of living to 80, we're living to 140?
Well, it means you look left and right more often when you cross the road. You know, some people may take fewer risks midlife because you've got another 50, 60, 70 years to go. But it will change the way people think about their lives. Right now, when you hit 50, you think, well, you know, everything's downhill from here on. Doesn't have to be that way. In the future, it won't be. Like a rubber band, we talk about stretching out your life so that you're healthier for longer, more productive. But actually, what would be very nice, and the goal is to have a much shorter period at the end of your life. So we call that compressing the morbidity stage. And so the best thing would be you live to 100, you know, you play tennis one weekend, you get sick, and your heart fails, you know, a couple of weeks later. And then society benefits, the family benefits. There's not this drawn out of decades of sickness with cardiovascular disease. And actually, the economics make sense. A lot of us intuitively think that the economics would be, you know, disastrous for the world. But actually, if you do the numbers, it's a cost saving, and trillions of dollars can be put back into education and other things for society.
Let's look at that downside potentially of having just a lot more people on the planet. Is it a problem when somebody's still working at 100 and they don't really like want to leave their career because they're chugging along and people are graduating from college and it's harder to find careers? There's just a lot more people around and people don't vacate their careers in the way they once did.
Yes. I mean, there's a point to the idea that the old need to get out of the way for the new. That said, I would look back at history. Every time we've had a medical advance, let's say sanitation or antibiotics, I'm sure there were arguments at the time. What are we going to do with all these people? These elderly people are not going to die from pneumonia. What are we going to do with them? No one would go back to those days. So I think that society adapts. Economists are correct in saying that as long as people are healthy, the society becomes wealthier. And that's a fact.
Okay, so let's say we do then get drugs that make us all healthier and live longer. Who's going to have access to them? I mean, are they going to be very expensive and there's going to be a big divide so that you have rich people, say, living to 200 and poor people still living to 75 or 80?
It depends on the technology. Old technology ends up being more expensive initially. So if it's stem cell replacement or something very high tech, then that will be out of the reach of most people initially. But the work that we're doing in my lab and the people that I'm working with, our goal is to make a drug that's just a few cents a day, to make at least. So in the long run, these drugs are going to be very cheap. I don't know if they'll be put in the water supply, but I think we're talking about something that could be that cheap.
What was the moment that made you so interested in the aging process and reversing the aging process?
Well, the first time that I can remember was when I was four. And I mean,
that's pretty early. You started, you weren't in a lab, were you?
I was not in a lab, though. My parents were scientists, so I had visited labs and okay. I knew what science was about. And you remember back in the early 70s, science could do anything. You know, Americans had just landed on the moon, and I grew up thinking we can solve anything. And we've lost a little bit of that, but it's coming back. But the view that I had was that it's a terrible thing that these people that you love and even the pets that you have, I had a cat called Mittens that I was distraught to find out that one day all those things would be gone and I probably would never see them again, at least not on this earth. And that was very distressing. And I'm not unique. I think everybody goes through that. I saw my children go through that. When my daughter realized that I would die and I told her the fact that I wouldn't want to lie to her, she started crying on the spot. How could this be? And I'm sure everybody goes through this. It's just that I couldn't get that out of my mind. Now, I didn't devote my life to this career so I could save my parents or my cat. But I did realize in college that this was an unsolved problem that could change the world. And I wanted to have an impact. And I've continued to do that.
David Sinclair is a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School, where he co-directs a lab on aging. David, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We've got more of our interview with David Sinclair at our website, innovationhub.org, including why he thinks women may be able to extend their childbearing years considerably.